Welcome, everybody, to Women We Admire, sponsored by PACSAW, the President's Advisory Committee on the Status of Women. I'm this year's chair, Stella Ngai, and now I'm going to hand it off to another woman we admire, Lynn Tierney, and fellow PACSAW member, to introduce these women, these chiefs, who we're so excited to hear from, who definitely exemplify grace under pressure. And right now, Lynn Tierney.
Hi. Anybody who wants to move up, you're welcome to. Come on, this is an intimate little setting. We're doing kind of an Oprah thing here. So I'm living out my Oprah fantasies.
Lance, why did you do it?
It's really a privilege to be here today. And what we decided to do is maybe do a couple of questions and answers to start things off. And we talked about some questions earlier, so I'm going to play moderator for a little bit, and then we certainly want to have time to have questions in the end. So if somebody watches the clock, Stella, would you watch the clock and cut us off, you know, so we can at least 15 minutes for questions, because you're going to have a lot of, you're going to get a lot of inspiration, but you're also going to have a lot of great questions. There was a very thorough bio of each of these ladies that was passed out. And as you know, Rita is the chief of police at Merced and faces all kinds of challenges out there in the town, in the building of a new campus. You know, we've seen some of the publicity from out there, kids in hot tubs here and there, and they're wild off-campus rentals, but some serious stuff. And really, after a law enforcement career and many years here in the UC system, it's at both Davis, Santa Barbara, and now taking the reins out at Merced, that's quite a challenge to bring this little campus, grow with this little campus as that campus grows. Some things you don't know and that weren't in the bio was Rita grew up in Boulder, Colorado. She was the state rodeo champ. Bull riding, roping, barrel racing. Stay out of her way if she's on a horse. She then became a hippie, went to college at CSU in Fort Collins. I asked her if she played the guitar. She said steel guitar, cowboy music, rockabilly. But, you know, I think it's really kind of important to recognize she's, you know, when you think about these women, and I'll introduce Pam in a minute, too, you think about people who saw something they wanted and absolutely went for it. And after several years after college, after getting being with the Sheriff's Department, Rita said she wasn't sure that the law enforcement was for her. So she took off and got an 18-wheeler and drove a truck for a year all over the country, saw the country in every state? Almost
all but two.
Okay. So, but none of that career stuff is surpassed by the fact that when she was back after being a truck driver, she decided she did want to stay in law enforcement, so she went to Northern Colorado State in Greeley.
Yep.
And one night, because she had the keys to the kingdom, she was working nights, she was in the enclosed pool area. Throwing ping pong balls at bats on the ceiling. So one can see that there are a lot of challenges in this group. At which point, a young student named Tom Selleck came in, and they decided to have a swim together. And I couldn't go too far into the story, but it went on for a long time. He found the woman with the keys to the kingdom, and she found him, and they swam laps for a long time, and you can maybe get to that in your question.
No, I can't swim.
That's Rita, and I'm sure you're going to really enjoy some of what she has to say. And Pam and I have been working very closely together. Pam is, in addition to being the head of the police force at UCSF, is also the chair of the Council of Chiefs. So that's a rotating position, and Pam happens to hold that chair now. And we've been very, very, very close for the last year and a half as we've discussed both the Robinson-Edley report and a number of, you know, because she's a geographical host the Regents meeting, so that's been a lot of fun. Pam has had an extraordinary career, grew up as a military brat, lived in 16 states by the time she got out of high school, was exposed to all kinds of things, began her law enforcement career, and then moved from that sideways into a management career in the city manager's office in Palo Alto, took a position, first was an investigator with the DA's office, and then got the opportunity to take a leave and go to the city manager's office in Palo Alto. And mommy's just making this up. And so...
Good, so keep going.
Yeah, right, and then she got elected president. No, but she's, you know, I've come to know her and watch her, and, you know, she's an extraordinary person. But I think that inside look at how municipal government was run and to see it from a completely different side than the law enforcement side has done her so well. And we see the evidence of that as she maneuvers her way through the complex UC system. And she's got a big police force over there, very competent, terrific police force who does great things. Pam, by the way, you may notice she's quite gorgeous, and that is because she was a beauty queen in high school. She was in Imperial County. She was a beauty queen. But she was also the state rifle champ. So I think you see these are diverse and wonderful women. And I'll just pose the first question, and I'll pose it to maybe we'll start with Rita. And can you talk a little bit about what led you into law enforcement? What was it about it that was appealing?
Well, it was a challenge, first of all. I went to, my first degree was in education, so I was going to go and be a high school teacher and be a high school coach. And so I started coaching girls basketball. This is when it was still, and I'm not as old as I'm going to tell stories of, but when they were, when women were still playing. And I couldn't get basketballs. A little bit of my own said, I can't work here anymore because I can't get basketballs for my girls. So I was talking to my father one day, and I said, I still want to help people. And we had a good friend who was a lieutenant in the sheriff's department in Boulder, Colorado. And I said, I think I'm going to go talk to Ray. And he said, that's no place, my father. No place for a woman. I said, okay.
I'm out the door.
I'm out the door. But he knew also, in rodeo and everything, that the challenge to me was, I'm going to say to you, you can't do it, and I know you're going to try. Because I was always raised, if you put your mind to it and you really want it, then you can do it. Whatever you want, you can do. So he challenged me, and in July of 1973, I became the first female deputy in Boulder, Colorado. And that, right then, it was fulfilling because I saw right away that I was going to be able to help people. A lot of challenges, you know, through law enforcement as a female. When I walked in, they forgot that there was a female coming. They had no locker room, so we kicked the janitor out, and I got the closet. So it was just a passion in my heart, and it was fulfilled by law enforcement.
And Pam, do you want to give us your take?
I came at law enforcement actually in a roundabout way. I was interested in psychology in college. I was actually started out as an English. We all know those people that skip majors, I started out as an English major, and then went to psychology. Got interested in abnormal psychology. And took a criminal law class, and it came together. And I was actually on a track to be a defense attorney. That's what I had decided I was going to do, is be a criminal defense lawyer and right the wrongs of the justice system, which is laughable now. But I actually took a couple of criminal law classes at the time. I was told by my instructors that law enforcement is not a place for a woman. I'm 5'2". There were still height requirements. In most law enforcement agencies, overseas in California well into the middle 70s. And usually it's about 5'8". And as I said, I'm 5'2", so it was laughable in some people's minds. I also never owned a pair of jeans until I got out of the academy. But long story short, I actually interned at the Santa Clara County Public Defender's Office. I started my approach to this career from the defense side. I never met an innocent person. After three months of full-time interviewing, jail interviews, et cetera, confessions for all kinds of crimes that people weren't charged with, I actually switched to the district attorney's office. And I both interned at the DA's office, and then I was hired after college at the district attorney's office. And I actually became a cop as a way of getting my state certification with every intent to go on and explore the career, but go on to law school and be a prosecutor. What I found is I love law enforcement. I love policing, which is so much broader, and that is the ability to intervene in people's lives and then ultimately in my career to really make communities safe. And I've spent most of my career as a municipal police chief, so I've had the opportunity to work both in the municipal environment and the university, and it's about building healthy communities and working in collaboration with all other aspects of the community.
Great. Do you have, can you talk to us a little bit about in your careers difficult positions or difficult situations that you faced, be they something that happened in the street or something that was within your administration or something that you had to overcome? Is there any one thing that stands out?
I don't know. As a woman, and probably a lot of you have overcome a lot of obstacles to get where you are or get where you're going, and I don't know that there is one. When Pam and I started law enforcement, it was kind of an oddity to have women in law enforcement. So we went through a lot of challenges. Not that the men don't go through a lot of challenges and a lot of testing, because they do. A young rookie is going to come, and it's short of hazing, because we don't allow that. But everyone's going to be tested. But I think just the test, whether you have, when you start out, do you have the physical strength? No, when I started out in Colorado, women had never gone over the 6-foot wall for the physical agility. So the physical agility test. So when I was testing, they decided, well, we'll take it down to 4 foot. I don't want to go over a 4-foot wall. I'm going to go over that 6-foot wall. And that was the first test. You go over a 6-foot wall. So they decided that, okay, women can go over a 6-foot wall. Then it goes to, well, do they have enough experience and can they hold their own around the table with command staff? Will command staff, am I going to tell this story? Will command staff listen? So I was raising through the ranks, and I was around a table with all males, all white males, and they just weren't listening to me. And I thought I had some good ideas, because you have to be thoughtful and very innovative and get your word out, but they weren't listening to me. So I walk into our staff meeting one day. You know those singing balls, those meditation balls? Well, I sat there, and I had a set, and I opened them up, and we went on with our meeting, and they, again, weren't listening to me. Mine were gold. So I set them out and asked them what colors they were. And at least through some humor, they started taking me in a little bit. But I think the challenges all along the way, even today, there are some challenges. I live in a part of the state right now that with the county and the city and some elected officials that I interact with. I can't tell you how many times I've been called cute little woman. So we're changing that.
Sam, have you faced challenges like that you can think of?
I'll tell you that it's hard to, there's so many. I, I'll say it's blatant hazing, actually, entering into this career in the late 1970s. For me, it was 1976 when I joined the Palo Alto Police Department. And some of the, you know, I saw big obstacles at the entry level, just getting in the door. Certainly the first promotion, I was the first woman ever promoted to a supervisory position in Santa Clara County. I've been in conferences where I'm the only woman, you know, hundreds of robbery investigators in California. I'm the one. And what I learned early on was, I think about the academy and the closet reminds me. I entered this career just so excited to be here, and I was shocked to find out that other people weren't as excited to have me as to be here. And it started at the Police Academy with my field training officer. Police officers go through intensive field training, so one-on-one training over a four-month period. And my office, my FTO introduced himself as the hatchet man, and his job was to make sure I didn't make it. And we ended up being great friends. But that's the introduction, and a reputation of several people being cut before me, the experimental women. So when I actually hit the door of the police department, there was a lot of pressure. I mean, it was really like all eyes are on you. And really, when all eyes are on you, and I found that as a first supervisor, as a new robbery homicide detective, as a police chief, when you're the first, all eyes are on you, you have at least two ways to perform. One is just be yourself, and they can take you or leave you, or you try to fit into a mold. And my belief is that you're far more successful knowing who you are and just being yourself. And that's my approach to it. So at one point I actually was thinking about changing careers because it was initiation is pretty intense, and I really felt, is this worth it? Do I want to do this? And I love this career, so I'm still here. It's been 35 years. I can say that there's been multiple initiations in my career. I have been the first woman promoted, the first robbery homicide detective, I was president of the Homicide Investigators Association in Santa Clara County, president of the Chiefs Association in the state of. I've had a lot of firsts. And I really believe it's just by looking people in the eye and being yourself. And, when I first came into law enforcement, it's not a very feminine job, let's put it that way. And it was very different for me. And I always felt, and I talked to other women, how do you keep your femininity in a job that where you're out there dealing with arresting people, they're throwing up on you, you're dealing with a lot of nastiness. And the trick is to always wear sexy underwear.
John Walsh told me the same thing.
It was our little girl secret. And when you're the only one in the locker room, you're so excited when that second one's there to share something with. I've used that same approach with every single set of challenges, and they differ at every level of the organization.
The next question, and Pam and Rita both put together these questions, and I think this one is something that our other speakers have talked about. And the question is, what are the three most pivotal moments in your career that you either learned from or got you where you are? And I'd just like to add to that question, could you talk about that in terms, if it's appropriate, in terms of, you know, were there mentors along the way when you reached these moments, and are there any things that you can share with us about ways that you were mentored or wish you had been? So
there are so many pivotal moments, I think, to look at three of them. First, just to make the decision that I, as a female, was entering in, like Pam said, so many firsts. I was the first deputy. I was the first at UC Davis. I was the first female commander. So just making that decision, and that leads from knowing yourself. If you know yourself, you know that you have something to contribute. You know that you bring something to the table. law enforcement sometimes can be a very serious job. So I learned not to take it seriously, not to take myself seriously. I certainly take keeping a community serious. I certainly take making sure that victims feel cared for. And I certainly take even the suspects, even those vomiting all over you, calling you all kinds of names. And there are a lot of female names I've come to learn. Respecting those people because they're human beings. So through those kind of pivotal moments and standing up for yourself, you can do it in a very, I have really nice sexy underwear on way, and get the point across because you're interacting as you. You are being you. My mentors along the way, when I first started out, I didn't go through a full academy. In Boulder, Colorado, they hired me. You're a deputy now, but you're going to go out and catch dogs for a while. So I did that with all of my gear on. You go out and you're a dog catcher in a county for a while. There's not much mentoring with dogs bringing puppies into a truck. And then I went, and there are different districts in rural and municipal law enforcement, and I was given 200 miles of mountain, Colorado mountains, for myself. Chicago had a big, if you remember the music group Chicago, that's where they hung out and practiced, and we had ski resorts. I had all of this myself. And the people from that community, we talk about community-based policing now. I was truly in a situation that I had to be supported by the community because I was all alone up there. So the community, these little towns and these little mountain people are the ones who mentored me that you have what it takes to be up here alone as a law enforcement officer taking care of us, making us feel safe. Now, there were a few times, and these were in the hippie years, too, there were a few times I looked around going, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do now? And saw some of my mountain folks standing there with a rifle, and I was very happy to see them. So those are my first mentors. It was the community, and I've never lost that. I've never lost my roots as being a community member because they're the ones who taught me I could do it. Then I went on to chiefs, and I got mad at them, and they made me do things I didn't want to do. The chief in Santa Barbara, who's no longer with us, but he would make me so mad because when I was in detectives, I didn't want to go out. I loved investigating. And he kicked me out to Isla Vista and said, you will go out, young sergeant. That was the best thing he did because then I led a multi-jurisdictional or multi-agency jurisdiction and it gave me confidence that, okay, now I can lead those people. It gave me confidence to take the next step to Davis where I went in as an outside female, first female commander in a department that when I walked in, everyone, all the cops in the patrol room had their feet up on the desk waiting for the big ones. And my chief at that time said, I hired you to be a change agent. It's like, oh, really? And he put me in some, we had a demonstration at the Primate Center. And one of the captains there, this was when I was lieutenant before I became captain, got in the car with me because he was going to make sure that, could do it right. And the chief stopped the car before we got out the driveway, and he said, Captain, you get out. This was hers. And he threw me right in the mix. This was 2 weeks after I got to Davis. He threw me right in the mix, and I could do it. And he gave me the opportunity to do it. But he always challenged me. So starting with my dad saying, you can't do this, to... to Calvin Handy, some of you know him, saying, you will do this, you'll go out and do it, and you better. you know. It was kind of a sideways look at mentoring, but as I look back on it now, they were great mentors.
So for me, I think about mentoring in different steps. When I was ready to be a cop, the world wasn't ready for me. And I found that I applied for a few jobs, and I would get through to the final interview, but I wasn't taken seriously. I didn't look the part. I was not dressed. I dressed like a woman. I really did actually have to change how I appeared in interviews. And I'd be asked questions like, well, do you know karate? Were you on the football team? I mean, just stupid questions. And I realized that, you know, looking back, that it was all about a lack of believability, whether I could handle the street. And those questions typically came from other women and the non-police members of the NORAL board, and which was interesting to me. So what I did was was much more overt. I felt like I needed to take charge, and I was only 21 at the time. But I went out and interviewed police chiefs here in the Bay Area, and I found I interviewed them about the environment, the culture, whether or not they're receptive to women, how to be successful in their organization, and in that process, I found my job, which was I knew that I wanted to work for the Cal Poly Police Department, and Jim Zerker, who John, if you were here in the Bay Area then, but Jim was a real cutting-edge law enforcement leader during the 70s and the 80s, and he retired in the early 90s, but just a fascinating person. Toughest person I've ever worked for in my life. But when I interviewed him, he said, well, what are your goals? And I said, well, you know what? I think I want to be in your chair one day. And I, you know, half-heartedly said that. But ultimately, I went through the process. Those were the days of stress interviews where you'd come into a room like this, and you'd have a panel, and they'd be stern, and they'd throw things at you, and you'd have to role play and do all kinds of things just to get a job. Jim mentored me by first giving me the opportunity. I was not hired at Stanford University because they thought I couldn't handle the football game, but I got hired and became a command staff at the Palo Alto Police Department with a much bigger problem. Go figure. But that was the plan at the time. During my time in Palo Alto, I felt it was real important for me as a woman to have and I wanted to be a detective. I came through the DA's office, the public defenders. I was an investigator. That's what I wanted to do. And early on, there was recognition of my administrative abilities. So it would have been easy for me to be plucked out of the enforcement role and gone into administration. I did not do that. My mentors wanted me to do that. I wanted to be robbery homicide, and I was. And that was one of my first goals. And it was probably the time of my life. I won't bore you with all the stories, but there's zillions of them. I even pitched pennies on the corner and caught a bank robber with my partner as he walked by because we recognized his shoes. I mean, it's just fun stuff. I've done the undercover stuff. That's what I became a cop for. But over time, I recognized that if you're going to make a career of this, it's better to be in the driver's seat. So I actually had a supervisor who encouraged me to apply for promotion. I didn't even think of it at the time, so other people believed in me. Later in my career, as I continued up the management train, I had some extraordinary opportunities. One of those was my mentor, Jim, ultimately got me to back working for him. So I was his chief of staff for a number of years. And in Palo Alto, in that organization, you can't promote beyond the lieutenant level without having a master's degree. I had, I didn't mention, but I had two babies, got married along the way. I actually worked patrol until I was 9 months old. Watch commander. I used to run around 9 months pregnant, ready to drop with a radio, and we spent half our time in East Palo Alto. So it's that was my first child. Second child, I was smart. But anyway, so he gave me an opportunity that to this day I actually it's extraordinary. We had a pay for performance plan in our compensation plan. Where you earn control points, so you can earn well above the standard pay and then a bonus. Instead of a cash bonus, he encouraged me to ask for a sabbatical and to get that, little role that, and no one had ever taken advantage of it, but I requested of the city manager a year off with pay to get my master's degree to reinvest in the organization. City council had to weigh in on it, so I went to the city council, and basically I got my master's degree. I had a 2-6-month-old baby, an 18-month-old baby. Not very good planner that way. I took a year off, got my master's degree in 1 year. And to accomplish that, I had to create classes because it's really difficult to do that in 1 year. But I did it on full salary with the blessing of city council as a belief in me, and that was because of my mentor. When I returned a year later, my commitment was to remain with the organization for a minimum of 2 years, which is a very small request given that level of investment. Never would I break through without that degree. And frankly, with two babies back to back in diapers, I wasn't going to school at night. When I came back, I did have an opportunity to work for the city manager, but by that time I was a lieutenant. And my chief called me, Jim called me, and says I was in crime prevention. I didn't really want to go to crime prevention because I really kind of am I was a hostage negotiator, robbery, homicide. That's kind of my mental framework. He wanted me to go to crime prevention. And so I did it, and we had a large unit, heavily engaged in the community. It introduced me to the community activists, which was very important. A few months later, he called me and said, I want you to go talk to the city manager. He has a job for you. And I was a loaned executive as an internship for a year working for city manager Bill Zahner during a time where we had 10 EPA Superfund sites, groundwater contamination, on city-owned property. And so what my job was to work through all the policy issues, the financial issues, the cleanup issues, and then do the legislative analysis. In the end, I worked for him for a year, looking at perhaps a career change in city management. Didn't take it. Never met a happy city manager. but it really introduced me to public policy. And my master's degree is in public administration, public policy. Was a great experience. A year later, I left to be a police chief in Oregon. So Jim Zerker really is, and I credit him for, one, he opened the door for me. Two, he showed me the way. I followed him into meetings when he would meet with, you know, controversial groups in the community. I learned how to do that level of work by doing it. And he brought me along as early as an officer throughout my career. Then he pushed me. I didn't want to go to crime prevention. That's where I learned about community activism. I learned how to organize. I learned really the true community policing. And then I wasn't really thrilled about going to work for the city manager. I mean, it was a much longer internship, but that's the road to promotion in that organization. So I did want to be a captain. And it turned out to open a door that prepared me for a career. And I have now worked in, if I include the public defender and DA's office, three police departments, and my job has been rebuilding departments and building communities. And I credit him for showing me the way.
I wanted to do one more question before we go to the question and answer period. It wasn't on the sheet, but I think I've had the opportunity over the last few months to go out and meet with the police chiefs organization a couple of times. And you know, I thought I knew everything, you know, just of that type. I think I know everything. But my jaw dropped when I started hearing about some of the challenges that the police face on the campuses and stuff. And I was just wondering if you could talk about some of the major issues you're facing with your department. And I hope I'm not catching you totally off guard, but, like, you know, what would this body be surprised at, or what kind of things do you face on the campus from a law enforcement perspective?
Well, I've been blessed with being able to bring up a brand new campus. And I was smart enough, I think, to hire smart people. Because I wanted to make this police department different than the traditional. So I have a force of people who wanted to be different than the traditional. So I have the typical challenges of, I don't have enough money, I don't have enough staff, and we really don't. I have 8 officers at Merced, and that gives me one officer on at a time. So they have to be very innovative because we're kind of out away our the fastest that they can get assistance from another agency is about 22 minutes. So they're out there by themselves. So that's a real challenge. It keeps me up at night a little bit. The challenge also, I don't know, Pam, if you've experienced this, but when police walk into a department or walk down a hall or something, it's, what's wrong? We have such an eclectic group at Merced that I wanted from the very beginning on March 15th, 2005, when I started that department, to get a culture that everyone didn't go, what's wrong? So I hired people not only for their extreme talents in policing, but their abilities to reach out and become part of the community. So everyone in my department has to be in a community organization of some kind. We started a mentor program where you're now going into our third elementary school where I have officers. I have over 156 UC Merced students who go into these schools, and we pick the schools by their, first of all, free lunch. Ones who have the most students in free lunch, because we know those are the students most at risk to jump into gangs, not go to college or anything like that. That has been a challenge for me, because why in the world would a police department do that? So I think I certainly have different challenges than I've had in the past at Davis when I was captain and assistant chief and then chief there for a while, because it's always about money. It's always about staffing. But I have created these challenges that I want the community to see us differently, because what we're doing, for example, in our mentor program is trying to help the entire community of Merced be good neighbors with Merced, but each one of my officers and all of those students are also recruiting for UC Merced because we follow the students through to high school, fourth grade to high school. And we have an eighth grader now who is still, they've become junior mentors. And he has quite a following, and he is bound and determined to go to UC Merced and goes out with us publicly and speaks about that. So those are, they're weird challenges, but I love those challenges.
That's great. Thanks.
So San Francisco's obviously quite different. Of the campuses, we're decentralized. We have about 230 locations in San Francisco. We are the second oldest campus in the system. And when I came to the department, it was about transforming that organization and growing it. We went from 40 employees to 148 employees within 5 years by basically consolidating all public safety operations into a single department. And then bringing the standard up so that we are now nationally accredited, which I'm very proud of. We've had to rebuild the organization. And so we all know in our jobs, when you are rebuilding an organization, that means that you have some people stay and some people go. And so all of the management challenges that are inherent in any one of your organizations as a leader, where you're developing people, you have you're promoting people, you're bringing people in and you're moving people out, as well as bringing the credibility of the organization from where it was to really a stellar level. And again, I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of my people. We work hard on retaining people. My officers are working the streets of San Francisco, side by side with San Francisco. And so I know that when I recruit, I'm going to lose my people to the city of San Francisco. There's different pay scales. There's different, much broader career opportunities. And so when I hire people for the investment they'll make at UC while we're here, and know that my people are among the most highly sought after by the city of San Francisco because we're so well trained. I mean, there's just a great opportunity, and they're familiar. And so we work in that close collaboration, but it means that we have constant change. We have all the same crime problems as any neighborhood in the city of San Francisco. We're in the Potrero, we're in the Mission, we're in the China Basin. It's a very active department. I think about it as a hybrid between a municipal police department and corporate security. And you pull those things together, and then, you know, we're biotech. We're all those things that you see at Falcon. So it's the challenges of keeping growing an organization and, of course, all the similar management challenges that you all have and neighborhood crime problems.
We've got 15 minutes, and so why don't we open it up for questions, and feel free to, ask any.
Hi, Pam. I have a question about the new affiliation with Children's Hospital here in Oakland, and what are some of the challenges that you see regarding whether your department will be providing, you know, policing that area, and what are some of the challenges you're facing with that?
Well, it's a great question because I don't know the answer to that one. But it's very timely because what we're doing is we're exploring that now. UCSF is engaged in an affiliation with Children's Hospital of Oakland. And with that, we're determining jurisdiction. I've got the lawyers looking at that. What is the extent of the affiliation? Will the hospital be independent? Does it become UC? What does that mean to us? And so what we'll be doing is an assessment of the policing arrangements, our Cleary reporting responsibility, the security operation, make some decisions about that. We have policing arrangements for all UCSF facilities throughout California. For example, we have a large location in Fresno, and we have local police respond to active cases, and then my detectives handle it. And then we do all of the security assessments. It's kind of private security. And then we do all the emergency management. So we'll have some type of arrangement we're expecting. Unfortunately, it's a very short window. We try to keep it quiet, and now it's probably going to go in July. So we're expecting some changes. One of the things that's always on the agenda at UCSF is, do we fully integrate? And what we would like to see is full integration of public safety, which means hospital security, campus security coming together. Everything is in the police organization except hospital security, and then we command that during times of emergency. But that's the key question here, because operational excellence ought to apply to us as well, and how we can have cost savings. Great question.
You haven't mentioned too much about students. How did you have to change your expectations when you came to the university, and that is now the population that you are primarily in charge of?
For me, no. I worked for the city of Palo Alto. Obviously, did a tremendous amount of work with Stanford University. I worked for the city of Corvallis, Oregon. The University of Oregon State University and the city are very intertwined, and frankly, students were one of the major crime problems in that community. We had 23 fraternity houses, it starts on Wednesday, and then Thursday, everybody knows, and then you go on through football games. So, for me, I have always worked around a community or a university environment. And particularly the city councils of both of those organizations were heavily influenced by the university. So I'm really accustomed to how we do business at the university, which is frankly, well, we all know, it's slow, methodical, consensus-based, and governments in university communities are very much that way too. So I'm accustomed to staffing 30 council committees. You know, it's just the way that those organizations work.
As far as students, when I first became a deputy in 1973, I was put in deep cover on the campus of the University of Colorado, Boulder, Colorado. I've grown up as a student. You know, I've just grieved that we're in my organization. I have 156 student volunteer mentors. And I have 120 either volunteer or paid students. So I'm surrounded by students in my organization. They do such good work. They know how we should act. They're the greatest advisors I can have on a university campus. When I was in in Santa Barbara, and we were having during the Gulf War, and we had hundreds of thousands of people demonstrating. My advisors were the students, the activist students, and they would come if they wanted to demonstrate and have their 15 minutes of glory and get all hooked up and arrested in front of the television. They would pre-sign up with me. They would give me who was, we knew who was going to be arrested. We already had the citation and all that kind of stuff. So I guess I live through them. So I couldn't do it without them.
Mary, did you have a question?
Yeah, it's more of a thank you note than a question. Because I think we do think of the students on the campuses, but there's also the employees. And I was at UCSF as a faculty member for 23 years. One of my staff was being stalked and her life threatened by her estranged husband. He worked in San Francisco and he lived in Hayward. Neither of those police departments were able to really do much of anything to help her, even with restraining orders and so forth. But he attempted to kill her in front of me, which was number one in the state. Number two, like you, I was 7 months pregnant and had him pinned up against the wall and then got sued out by the chief of police, your predecessor, for 30 minutes of the guy's donor hearing, and I could have killed you and the baby, but I'm like, that was not what I was thinking. So she's gasping for air on the floor, trying to revive. I've got him pinned up against the wall. Finally, somebody comes to help, who I yell out, call the police, call the police, who chased him, who kept him from hitting her with a tire iron that night after he slashed her tires, and then staked out three different locations for 48 hours. UCSF took six police for 48 hours and staked out three locations to arrest him when he'd been trying to kill her for 6 months. They finally got him in jail, and finally got him convicted, and, you know, everything taken care of. But I swear to God, she would not be alive today without the UCSF police. Thank you note, and it was also my learning that UC police are state police. You have jurisdiction throughout the state of California. And next to constitutional autonomy for the University of California, I think having us have a state police department, it was the smartest thing ever done. Because you've got all the cross-campus coverage, you've got the ability to handle issues for university employees and students that local police departments. So thank you for that dedication.
Yeah, Rita, would you?
I have always said, and I've been law enforcement 41 years with the UC system. I start my, in a few days, start my 29th year. And I have always said that university police officers are the best police officers, and I will put them up against any police force that anyone can bring me, because they're well-trained. On my force, half of my force have master's degrees. All of them have a degree. They're well educated, and they care. They care. We have in Merced, we have the same problem. Other police departments can't take care of it. So what's happening now with our students, staff, and faculty, they come to our police department. We won't refuse any report. It may be we have to hand it off to another agency, but our University of California police statewide are tremendous. So thank you.
John?
Do you feel like your departments now are supportive and welcoming of women who want to be officers? Do you feel like there's more
improvement? I would say that Certainly the departments in terms of peers are supportive. The recruiting is always an issue. And women in law enforcement, I mean, it's still considered a pathfinding career. It's less than 10% of the total law enforcement population. There are many, many reasons for that, and most of it is work-life balance. You know, the attraction of it's such a non-traditional career for women. So I don't know. That hasn't changed much. Well, actually, we're almost 10%, which I can say that it's changed in our lifetime. That recruiting is always a concern. And frankly, talented women candidates are highly sought. So, because we're all trying to diversify our organization. In terms of balance, the opportunities for promotion. I'm sure it's just, I can't speak for everyone because I don't know the answer, but I can speak for my own organization where gender is just not an issue. We have, a good percentage of women. I shoot for 20%. By the way, that was Jim Zerfer's goal, 20% women. He had like 1% women. but he always said, we're going to have 20% women. And why? Because you set your goals high and you'll achieve them. And, you know, I think someday we'll get there. It's still an issue in the profession. More and more women police chiefs. Less, you know, I've been a police chief for 22 years, long time. And when I first started, there was nobody else there at the conference. And now we have a national women's law enforcement leaders organization. We have in California, there's a state organization.
Yeah, I think it's opening up. It depends on the leader. I'm lucky enough to have, well, had one leave. I had 50% women. And the Merced area, when I moved in the Merced area, had zero women police officers. And now you see them coming into the police department and the sheriff's department. I don't know why that is. Maybe peer pressure, goody-goody, you know. But like Pam says, it's very difficult to recruit women, and I think it is work-life balance that they may not have significant others that would be as supportive as they would need to have them.
We're just right about out of time, but I wanted to just give a little editorial. Since I took over this new job as head of working with the variety of constituents on implementing the Robinson-Headley plan, it's given me an opportunity to understand, you know, we have 10 separate police departments. It's not all one department. It's 10 separate police departments, about 400 officers and commanding officers, and I've heard things, snippets of conversation like, you know, at UCLA, the police at UCLA are extraordinarily protective of the kids at UCLA because they don't want them on the street subject to some of the things that go on with other people or actors or sometimes an over-aggressive department out on the street and things like that. The officers that we have, you know, and I come from a law enforcement civic background and have had the opportunity to really get to know some very fine police officers and police departments in my life. But I think the thing here is when we sat down to write the Robinson-Headley report, one of the things we did was talk about putting forward the mission that we're a different kind of entity. We're the university and we want to keep the mission of education and fostering free speech and all right out front. And I think every one of the police departments that we have that as their main mission and really work every day to facilitate that, to facilitate the opportunity for people to express themselves and also to work with their officers because they have a lot of real challenges, you know. But having these two incredible women as mentors for me has been great over the last couple of months and showing me the ropes. And I think that there's not a better example in the organization of people who have challenged themselves and just gone for it, you know. I mean, from riding bulls to doing this kind of work and from, Pam, raising these kids and going out and pursuing your education, but just going for it and getting up every day smiling because there's no better job in the world. So thank you both for doing this, and thanks for the time and effort you put in every day.